Brew Nation, welcome to episode 966 of Random Musings from the Clinical Trials Guru. In this episode, we take a deep dive with a bunch of clinical research site owners, Dave LaHaye, Lee Eifler from Makoa Health, my business partner Jaime Vaez, and myself from Yuma Clinical Trials. And we just get really candid about all kinds of things, the state of research sites today in June of 2025 and going forward. And I wanted to give a shout out to the sponsors of this podcast. The first one is Inato. Inato is an amazing tool that everyone on this podcast episode actually uses. It's free. You can get studies for your site. Absolutely free. You just need therapeutic area expertise. Cost you nothing. They don't get involved in your contracts and budgets or anything like that. So check it out. The next sponsor is Creo. Creo is my command central station at Yuma Clinical Trials. It is so much more than just the eSource and the eReg. It's a CTMS. It's a patient recruitment portal. It integrates with other apps. It retrieves records for you. It has e-signatures. It's a CTMS. It's a one-click invoicing. They're always innovating. They're always adding more. Check out Creo. Only pay for what you use. Links to both in the show notes. Links to David LaHaye and Lee Eifler and Jaime is in the show notes. Enjoy the episode.
Right here.
Why did you start this train? We're gonna send this video to Daniel so he can put it like right now. And
show I'm gonna people. Have another video done.
Well, just in the corner, like just this train's going around. Okay. What? Why'd you do that? And didn't. It's not cheap. First
it's
of
for,
all,
right? No, it's not. But it's,
you do know we're in a recession,
right? I did it for patient retention purposes, and I think.
Okay.
The patient experience for participants, it has to be elevated by compared to
so is the idea like it's an entertainment or like it goes from the waiting room, like it goes
it
through
goes
different
through the waiting room and through all the offices.
Yeah.
And the reason I did it was because I went to a restaurant that had one, and I was kind of I was mesmerized by it, and then I was telling my kids about it, and then I took my son. I was back there. It's like, hey, let's go here. You got to see this. So I went back again,
of course,
because I wanted to see it. And I thought, you know, if this it entertained me enough that I wanted to come back and show my son. In fact, I stopped there often now. But I thought this will make patients want to come back. People need to want to come back to the site.
So
most
like a
doctor visits
tool.
Aren't pleasant. So it's a retention
tool. You could probably
tool.
Get it paid, reimbursed by some sponsor.
No,
might pay for itself.
I don't know what
a few
sponsors
times over.
We're working with, but mine aren't gonna do that.
We could put it in the justification letter. I just wrote one yesterday.
Well,
I could throw
I
a train
that.
In there.
It would also break the ice too. You know, the patient will come in all tense, so like, is this for real or not? Like, this guy's just joking or
yeah,
whatever.
You got a winter and wonderland in there
that distracts them too.
I can tell you from experience because Reed just put it in, and our first patient came in yesterday since the train's been installed.
Yeah.
And I saw he was mesmerized by it.
Of course.
And he was like, this is so neat. And then we only pre-screened him. He's like, well, when can I come back? You know, and it did help. He was excited to,
yeah,
man, we might need
to come back.
Here.
So
or something, because it is. I mean, now that I think about it, they come in, you know, worried or having doubts maybe. And now they see something that distracts them a little bit. I'm definitely thinking they'll be more open to continue, especially patients that like for psych studies. You know, they come more apprehensive, if you will.
I was thinking that in pediatrics as well.
Yeah,
pediatrics too. As well.
We don't do peds, but yeah, true.
Yeah, because what do they say? That's actually you're genius, man.
Yeah.
What do they say about usually you, for our psych studies? I almost didn't come because it seemed sketch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The psych people always say
yeah.
that more than anyone else.
Yeah. Yeah.
Either because they have less of a filter or they just truly feel that way.
Yeah.
But either way, it's the reality. And this maybe would give them some.
A tool, yeah.
Man,
that's awesome.
Like, this guy wants to pay 12 grand for that train.
Well, it'll help with recruitment. It'll help with recruitment, too, because they're going to talk about it, you know.
Yeah.
And redo a lot of, like, free fibro scans.
Well, now the challenge is to get that reimbursed.
Yeah.
Well, I think we could.
I'll try.
There's
I'll
a way
try.
To do this.
So <is the> way.
I got to put this jersey on. Thank you, by the way. So introduce yourselves while I put this on and show
okay.
you guys.
I'm Lee Eifler, CEO of Makoa Health. I also own a new site in Goodyear, Arizona, called Goodyear Oasis, partnered with Dr. Kelmet. Dr. Kelmet is one of the few doctors that really drove into research, re-met at SOS.
I remember him.
Yes, yes.
He's a good find.
He is a good find. He's top-notch. So we're trying to onboard some studies right now. He actually brought in a cardiologist for us. And I have one of my other physicians that I worked with in the past that's coming over to kind of train some people. So we're looking to onboard our first two studies right now, one being in cardiology and the other being a vaccine study. I'll pass it over and let Dave introduce himself.
All right. I'm David LaHaye. Let's see. I guess I should introduce myself at
the
least.
Legendary David the legendary David LaHaye. We did 2-hour podcast just recently.
That's true. Yeah. So I guess jack of all trades, but, you know, master of none. I think Lee and I got started in 2020. We co-founded West Valley. We co-founded Makoa. We are representing today. We co-founded Great Lakes Research Institute in Detroit, Michigan, that we recently exited from in December. And, you know, and then we've kind of worked on some of our own things right now. So as of now, I guess my workload has probably been cut in half roughly after the acquisition. And so I'm focusing on a couple of things. So I've got to see where I'm going to put the rest of that time. But for the most part, I'm working on one site in the Rio Grande Valley. And
he's famous for the quote, the ceiling of progress is complexity.
Complexity is the ceiling of growth.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Amazing. That has been living rent-free in my head since SOS.
Yeah, I think that's about it for me.
He's a fan of automating. Oh, because of you,
yeah.
Today was our first day we had not one but two people show up automatically because of Patient Ace.
Isn't that awesome?
So I sat with Ronick. I'm like, how the hell did Dave do this? And we didn't get it perfect. We only got it like, it's not exactly how I want it to be yet, but we're trying it out. And the coordinators were like, hey, people are just showing up. I'm like, yeah. They're pre-screened. So they're not like actual screening yet, but they're pre-screening. And especially when we're slow right now, in between studies, we only have 2 studies enrolling. Why not have people come in? And then when we get an admin, it doesn't matter what studies they come in for. The admin's going to check them here for whatever we have.
Yeah, that's such a brilliant tool.
That's because of you.
Hey, thanks, man.
Yeah.
But you, like, once you have something there, you know, it doesn't have to be perfect. You know, you can always iterate, make it a little better. But what it gives you and what it gives the site is that now all of a sudden you have a lever. So you want to be busier? Okay, well, let's throw a little bit more into this. Because you're going to have, and it gives you metrics that you can follow too.
Yep.
You have a certain number of no-shows. That's kind of what you get to tinker with. If your no-shows are 50%, maybe you can do something a little differently within the constant contact marketing, the communications. And then maybe that 50% number goes up to 60%.
Or even have the human admin get to work on that. You know?
Yeah.
There's a lot coming in the future with automation. That's actually already here.
Yeah.
Judy sent me this thing, and that's where Daniel's going next. Tomorrow? When are you going to Judy? Tomorrow?
We're going next Friday.
Oh, next Friday. She sent me this thing where it's like you could hire an AI. And this is now the second company that is doing this. And the AI is to call all your people and schedule. And so you're starting to get away from like the human.
I'm a little contrarian on that.
I know you are. This is why it's a good podcast.
I like the Patient Ace tool and automated for certain things like pre-screening, especially if it's fibro scans. You can have people schedule their own fibro scan. That's efficient. But for most things in research, and everybody's trying to go heavily automated on a lot of stuff, but when it comes to coordinator tasks and or recruitment, I think when you're anytime you really try to take the human out of research, you're just wrong. I think that human connection is really important, and that's what helps with retention. And that's what helps people come in. You're just talking about how, especially on the psych trials, they're like, oh, it feels sketch. So building that level of comfort over the phone with those initial calls is vastly important, drastically important to the.
You dropped the ball the other day. This is human error. This is why I'm in between you guys somewhere. We had a patient, I didn't even tell you. New study, so everyone's getting used to it. But it's kind of my fault too. I told the patient last week, oh, if you need a ride, we can get one. And then I had the coordinators continue later. I forgot about it. Well, it turns out he was a no-show for his visit. We forgot to give him a ride. Oh, and he got pissed.
Yeah. Well, I want to make a counterpoint on to that. So Peter Thiel has a concept in 0 to 1. Have you read that book? Yeah. You know what I'm talking about? It's basically like how it's similar to a modern day, like crossing the chasm. Like what, like how do you create something new that's really has stickiness to it? And part of that book is a solution needs to be 10 times better than what's currently around. And so while, you know, there's nothing incorrect about saying, you know, I like to have a real human, flesh and blood human being on the other line with me when you call. You want to also ask yourself, when, what time of day are patients generally on Facebook, you know, clicking on your advertisements? And what I find, because I get all of the text messages whenever somebody schedules an appointment, is that they're often on relatively late at night, beyond when none of us want to be in the hour, like in the office working and making phone calls.
Or none of your staff want to be in the office.
Yeah, right.
That's a really, really good point, Dave.
Yeah, so I think that makes it 10 times better.
But isn't that why you can outsource to Asia?
India, yeah.
No, because when you're trying to build trust from the initial from the initial contact,
that's a bad idea.
I think it's a bad idea because
we're considering a lot of things.
I like that for like data entry because you know, as you finish up your day, by the next morning you can have all your EDC entry in, and then the coordinators can come back and QC it, and they can kind of be an offshore QC
whenever I get busy. That's a good point.
Yeah, because
they only give you a few days to do that.
Yeah, it gives you 24-hour.
They judge you on these metrics now.
Mm-hmm.
We got slapped in the face with that recently.
Yeah, we've had. So I recently brought on Jen Pages. Somebody else I met.
Shout out to
SOS.
Jen.
Yes, she is fantastic. She is basically taken over as her chief operating officer and chief quality officer.
Remote
and on site. She's actually on her way. She's going to be at the site next week.
Okay.
She spent a couple weeks there.
You remember Jen, right?
I remember a lot of people. I just don't know their names.
Her and her brother Felix have been helping out, but she's really gotten involved. We're actually partnering up on some stuff now. We're going to be rolling Makoa Health.
They're the dancers. They like to dance, right?
They were dancing with Darshan.
Okay. I know who they're. Now that you mentioned the brother, I remember the brother.
Yeah, they like to have a good time.
They're from fun. Florida,
we get
right?
Along really well.
Yeah,
too.
From Florida.
From Orlando now. Yep. She moved.
Yeah.
She moved.
But from a quality standpoint, we were, you know, we needed some improvement. With Dave, we'd been so focused on the sale of the other site that it was really, I had personally gotten a little distracted. But now everything's in, cleaned up, buttoned up, and we are charging forward fiercely. And that's fastly. Good. So
we have Sam.
But shout out to Jen. Thank you for all
your
help.
Shout out to Jen. We just brought on, I can't mention it, but we brought on someone part time remotely to you. And she's amazing. I'll tell you off camera who.
Yeah. I was talking to Dan about that because, I mean, don't we hate whenever you're trying to call a store and you just get the, I don't understand. What do you say? I mean, maybe it's my accent or maybe it's just the machine itself. But it's annoying to talk to the machine just not getting it, right? So I agree with both, actually.
Yeah.
I think AI and automation, it's great to a point. And then once you want to build that relationship, I think it has to be a human, I think, right?
Yeah.
So I was even talking to Dan, what about if the patient A is understanding that most people will be checking their ads or Facebook or Instagram after work hours, right? Mm-hmm. It's just to, like, the automation be like, hey, you know what? You look so you qualify. Let's either you schedule your pre-screening visit or one of our staff members will call you first thing to the next business.
I get concerned.
That's what we have now. Pre-schedule yourself the pre-screen.
Yeah.
I might do that because people schedule it at night. I'd like to see the no-show ratio. I mean, I like the flexibility it can offer, especially younger people are a lot more comfortable with that than the older generation. I like the idea that that's when people are on, but maybe if we just create an option, I might create an option where if you want to call, you know, we'll be happy to call you.
Yeah.
Time.
With automating, you're guaranteed a certain number of touch points prior to that. And they're also not, you know, it's not, intrusive, right? If somebody gets a text message, a reminder, oh, just to let you know, tomorrow's your appointment. And then day of, get another reminder with the address and everything, and you know, the phone number. So that also deepens the relationship, even though it isn't a human. But you are establishing a relationship, yeah, with an organization, just like, you know, anything else.
That's
like
a fair point as well.
You know, I mean, we don't think about it, but like, you know, I've got a relationship with Coke Zero as well because I drink so much of it.
It's bad for. I can introduce you to a doctor here before you leave.
What?
Oh, yes, he'll tell you why that's horrible.
What I'm not saying like it's necessarily a good relationship.
Is that Dr. Joe?
Dr. Joe, man. Oh, yeah.
Dr. Joe.
By the way, he's waiting in the wings to be a PI. Uh-huh. So we got the green light from his boss, which is our PI, that if we want to expand here to San Luis, which is 20 minutes south, right on the border, which is where Jaime has a good infrastructure as well, that he's got the green light so we can try to get him studies to you. But this is why I like talking to site owners that are kind of at the same stage of we are. I mean, you guys had an exit, so you're way ahead of us. But with Makoa, at least it's similar.
Yeah, we started about the same time. Probably maybe
21, July 21 we started.
Okay, so yeah, that's right about the same time.
Yeah, yeah.
I might have been a little bit behind. No, I think it was right about.
Yeah.
Right about then.
But what did you guys learn since then? Between now, I mean, you've had it's very few people start around that time and have a successful exit already. That's rare air right there.
Yeah, I mean, technically anybody could have an exit, but
a successful exit. Right. One that you consider successful by your own standards.
Yeah, you know, I'll still say DSCS, we were talking about this on the way over. The DSCS, if you're a new site owner, it is the best money you can spend.
Wow.
It is.
There you go.
Shout out to Chris Robert. Yes, wow.
Chris, and, well, just having access to somebody that has taken the lumps, and you know, we were on the phone. We probably were annoying you and Chris because we're like, hey, you know, we just didn't have the experience at that point on how to solve challenges and just getting guidance, and obviously the recruitment, the trial acquisition, and the budget negotiations,
best practices.
You
know what bugs me about new site owners that never done it? They get so caught up in things that don't matter, like, but they think it does. Mm-hmm. So, like, raising money or getting the logo right or even getting, like, the staff. Like, just get a PI. Figure out where you're going to do the study and if it's in their office or you got to rent your own. That's it. And then you learn how to be a coordinator. Honestly, mm-hmm. It's not that hard if you start with one study to figure it out.
No.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people that are, you know, afraid of success. And so they... maybe it's inherent or whatever to them, and so they busy themselves with things that they can do, and then you know eventually they could be like, "Wow, we could just never get this company off the ground."
But I gave it the old college try.
Yeah, give the try, but the logo just
they're deceiving themselves.
Yeah,
that's I don't partner with people that won't burn the boats, so to speak. If they
burn the boats, dangerous.
Well, it depends
where you are in your life.
Yeah, it's a Tony Robbins. It does, but if you're, that's a lot of people want to keep that. You know, they want to have that safety net. They won't quit their job to get involved. Like, oh, I can do this. But then, like, I'm not gonna work 6 to 10 at night because you want to keep your day job either. And I'm sorry, we're gonna do work during business hours, and then we can partner up. I don't mind helping with funding and stuff, but you need to. You have to take that risk if you're not willing to take that risk, because then what happens is you dip your toe in, but you're never all in and you don't commit to it. And that's why I like the burn the boats reference, because, you know, if it's die or succeed, people tend to succeed.
You need die.
Nah, don't die.
I think there's many ways to do it, but I agree with the philosophy too. There is also the pragmatic aspect of, like, I know of several CRAs that never quit their job that started successful sites. And I think these days the tools like automating and having Creo, the ability to see what's going on at your site without being there, it's never been available prior to this generation.
Yeah.
Like, burn your boats probably was the only strategy 10 years ago. I think it's still... maybe a good philosophical way to motivate yourself, but it doesn't mean you can't if you don't do that. But yes, it depends on that person.
It doesn't
person.
Mean you can't, but it...
The probabilities, you're right. I agree with you on that. But there's also the sense of, like, those people that are scared to do it because they don't want to quit their job, and then they'll just never do it. I think if you're the right person, you can kind of do both for a while until you can mm-hmm. figure out if it's working or not. That way you don't really burn the boat. But I feel you, man.
You can especially do that if you're doing it independently. But the thing is, when I go in, I go all in.
Okay, yeah. So you're setting your own rules.
I don't know any way to go except all in.
Fair enough. That's your criteria as a partner. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm not saying it's impossible.
Right. Okay. I got you.
And there's a lot of groundwork that has to go into building a site before you have something that you could recognize as a site, right? You got to find a PI. You've got to find studies.
Well, how many years do you think consistently you need to do in order to say, okay, like, I think we're a successful site? I think it's the first year could be fool's gold. Or you could have a good year out of like four. No. Are you really successful? I mean, you're still around, but you're really that 1 year subsidizing your other three.
I think it's a patternization of growth. While you could have, so it really takes 2 years to establish that. You may have one great year, which could be fool's gold, but then do you have solid revenue the next year? Even if you go down, is it solid? And then the third year, is there growth on that? So are you growing or are you shrinking? Establishes
and the growth
really
could
where
be...
you're at. Even if you have a killer first year, the second year could go down, but you could still really be establishing growth because maybe you have more studies and they're longer revenue studies versus a couple short ones that you know that all the revenue is front loaded in 3 months. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's also markers of success that isn't necessarily revenue, you know, linked, because if you do get, you know, in many cases. Sites get one study that makes a ton of money, and then you know you could look at it, it's like, okay, does this mean I can be lazy now for forever? Or like, do you diversify? Do you create a more like a stronger site that has situations where if somebody gets hit by a bus, the company doesn't fall apart?
The growth and is so, there's different metrics. It's not just revenue, although that's the ultimate scorecard, but it is the little things that add up to it. Like in our we've been now four years in July, right?
Yeah.
We've had 15 studies, maybe, if you count the bad ones, maybe 20. Only five of those we made over 250K, right? So that tells you, what is that, 5 out of 20? 20%?
Yeah.
It's literally the 80-20 rule. Yeah. 20% are like, what is your business? The other 80 is like distraction. But it's not truly a distraction if you're getting on a CRO's database. So it's like a loss leader.
No.
Or like if you think about it like a retail store, like, okay, well, we're going to sell like the generic stuff, but really we make our money here. Mm-hmm. So it gets complicated when you look at different metrics like that. Growth, revenue. Clearly revenue is everyone's favorite. But
This industry is not good if what you want to see is like consistent, regular, granular revenue. Like once you have, you know, once you have patients enrolled, you have great visibility like into your backlog and what's coming in the future. But what you unfortunately don't have is like, you can't go like every study make 100K or 200K.
Right.
So that means if I want to make a million a year, I need 10 studies.
Yeah, man. From the 20 or so studies, only five are 250K and above. And only two of those were 500K and above.
Yeah, that's how it is. I mean, as you just mentioned, the good studies, the bad studies, and I like what you said about diversification on the site. You know, we have internal med, sleep, pulmonary, cardio, neuro, psych. So we've seen it. I'm new in research. This 4 years, this is the only research experience I have, besides looking at the end result of research, right? But then some studies, like let's say neurology goes down, but then metabolic, it's
different indications.
You know, and then metabolic kind of stays stagnant.
Look at vaccines right now. If you were
dead,
this administration is not playing.
I remember that we never done a vaccine study ever, ever.
We almost did.
We almost did, and then I remember Dan saying, like, you know what, they are a good one to keep us afloat, right?
Yeah.
To keep us moving. And then
they keep canceling.
Yeah. And now with the new changes, God knows how it's going to be, right?
Right now, it looks good for like gene therapy, which, I mean, you need crazy capabilities. Are you guys looking and doing like CRISPR type studies at any of your sites?
I don't. don't see yep.
one and done kind of things or
yeah no
those are specialized really. Stuff yeah. that's the way it's headed.
I'm looking at some adipose tissue studies, you know, which are
allogenic or
no, there's stem cell compounds they're making.
Okay, because that's a new thing too. I saw on Twitter or on X this morning, in vivo allogenic, like forget about getting your own and getting it 4 weeks to get it manufactured like a CAR T. Like the new thing is in vivo. This is why I'm staying away from one particular investment, because that scares me. Like that narrative, if it's true, is over. It's a paradigm shift. And then they're still going to need sites to do those kind of studies. So at some point we might have to adapt and figure out how to do that.
I want to do some, I'm looking for IVD studies right now. I want to do IVD studies and some just any collection studies.
Those are like small, high, slow but high volume, right?
Yeah, they're high volume. They're, I mean, they're typically one visit studies, but I like to tag it, merge it with my, which is actually a Dave idea. It merges well with pre-screening, because now we're bringing people in to pre-screen for liver studies and or COPD studies. But
so instead of sending them home, you say, hey, well, we do have this.
Yeah, we bring them in. Well, and that gives them an opportunity to leave with a stipend. It's not much, but it comes in, and then they feel like valued, like, hey, here's what you're doing. You know, this is going to help develop this device, and now we've got your medical history and everything else on our short form consent, so we can get their spirometry, or if they're COPD or asthma, or we can do a liver scan.
I like that. And they're gone before the train makes another round.
Yeah.
before they have to pay again. yeah, interesting. You're just expanding the database. And I like what Dan said. Never let a crisis go to waste. What was that quote, right? So, maybe they didn't qualify for this study, but we got these other options. And on top of that, we got you in our database.
Redo this thing. It's funny. When we... So a lot of our studies require, so like we have some cardiology studies where maybe somebody hasn't, they haven't had a heart attack yet, but they've still reached out. And we have COPD studies and asthma studies. They all are going to require exacerbations and or hospitalizations. Yep. So we kind of have the saying with all of our recruiters, that is, we tell all these patients two things, you know, we say, make us your second call. So if you have an exacerbation, you know, you call 911, go to the hospital, go to the doctor, do whatever you need to do. And then as soon as you get out, you call us, make us your second call. Oh. And then we kind of, and then we end a lot of the phone conversations with, after we've talked to them, letting them know that we really care about them. Like, hey, hope to never hear from you, you know, if it's the event that if they're looking for a cardiovascular event or an exacerbation. Now, if you have COPD, it's eventually going to have, you're going to have an exacerbation. But we still, it's just, you know, clever and funny and builds a relationship, you know, like, hey, I hope to never call you, you know, and they'll usually respond with that. They'll laugh at it. But those are the two things that we do on a recruitment level, you know, make us your second call and then hope we don't hear from you.
Yeah, sure of that. If we do, we might have a study for you.
Right. Well, that's what it is. They do want to participate and help, you know, especially... with COPD, they really
those
want
are tough. We have a good one now. I'll tell you later. It's actually decent.
I'm screening like six people for a COPD study this week.
Yeah, we only did like two or three.
But and right now it's in our area, you know, Phoenix, Yuma. It's bad for patients with COPD and asthma. I'm seeing in the regular clinic a lot of exacerbations because this little wind, it's coming this last round of exacerbations for the summer, I think. I mean, that's typically what we see. And right now they're getting a lot of exacerbations.
I have about 1,400 COPD patients that reactively reach out to, that we track for at least quarterly for exacerbations.
Wow. How do you get, you just call them all? Or you have access to their records?
Some of them, if they've been in and screen failed before, or we may have extra records, but no, we email them.
It's
and
just
text message.
The old fashioned blocking
email.
And tackling.
Yeah, and then when we get new studies, we'll blast.
Who
it
does
out
the
to
email?
All of them.
Is that automated, or you have like an admin?
No, I have recruiters that do it.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm building a new patient database currently, Caroline, who's kind of my back office support. Is building a new patient database for us right now. It's pretty complicated, but that'll have the ability then to
send automatic emails and texts, which will be a lot better.
What do you think about competition? New sites coming up, big site networks consolidating. I mean, it's happening in every major market. I don't know if the Phoenix market well, but it's got to be happening there. Site networks.
It is. The site networks are coming in. There's a lot of consolidation, and I think the...
Does that affect you negatively or positively, you think?
It doesn't affect me at all. I'm not against it. I'm fine where we sold one to a site network. I'm happy to work with site networks, but they also don't affect me much either. I see the advantages to it. It's really a personal decision. I don't know where I fall on it because I think there's certain people that we know. I don't want to say their name on here that are like, there's no way they're ever going to a site network. They are the they are the head of it all.
Yeah. Shout out to Brad.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, it's commendable. I mean,
it is, and I don't know where I'm at there. I don't know if I'm ready because I really like what I'm doing, especially we have a lot of unique.
I'm on the number zero on that one, undefined.
Undefined.
Yeah.
I really think you can. Like, so with DSCS, we have the luxury of, like, at any given time, there's about 85 sites in our network.
Mm-hmm.
Most are starting out, but there are some that are established. We are currently seeing a binary split. Like, almost half of our sites are like, oh, we've never been busier. And the other half are like, hey, we're not getting anything. Studies just dropped off. And then if you look at where they're located, it's heavily concentrated site networks where they're at. So I think if you're a small site and you're not improving, like not maybe automating or not figuring out that complexity thing, like the site networks have, and if they're more efficient, Fortrea or whomever is going to go there instead of you.
The game plan is the same either way, whether or not you have velocity in your backyard or if you don't. You know, like the key for any of us, like any business generally, is that you'll be successful if you produce some kind of unique value that they can't get elsewhere.
I was going to say, what's the value proposition?
Yeah, like, you know, for instance, like where are they going to go if, you know, for clinical trials in Yuma, Arizona? Like that's...
Thank God nowhere else right now. Right? Right? Velocity, stay out of here.
Yeah, so you bring up something kind of unique and valuable. And you know, kind of like Lee and my first home run in this industry was we operationalized COVID-19 testing to find patients for COVID-19.
I remember that, man. I was telling you about that.
Yeah.
You know, so all of a sudden you've got this unique value. You've got a site that doesn't need to have like a urgent care or anything like that connected to it. And we could just basically like turn it into a factory. It's like a, you know, patient, and everybody won in that case. And we've done that a couple of times afterwards.
Do any of those patients from that study, you know, because the thing about stuff like COVID or like influenza, for example, is those people also have anything else. They have obesity, they have heart disease, they might have COPD, depression. I mean, they're just people, right? Mm-hmm. So, but you get a huge numbers. Do you ever go back to that database and say, well, now we have a COPD study, let's just hit them up? There's probably some needles in the haystack there.
Yeah, but we really closed that site down. The separation.
You can't take the database
fresh
with you?
No, we didn't.
And the location's too far away, like Tempe.
That where I went? That a site that I went?
Yep. Yes.
Yeah, I forgot about the entire history of that.
Yeah, but certainly taking that data, combing that data, and I like the phrase spending every dollar twice. Yeah. So, you know, hey, you spent all this money get this patient in, like see what else they could qualify.
Spending
for.
Every that, dollar twice. Two like quotes of the year.
Or three times.
Jaime likes that one. He chuckled on that one.
Man.
Hey, you're speaking his language
there.
Explain that one. Spend every dollar twice.
So if you spend money on, like, you know, I want to find a patient, so there's a certain cost associated with that. Can you, like, is that the only thing that you can get, like, a value out of that? Or once you have that, is that now an asset that you can use for something else? So, like, earlier we brought up, like, the in vitro diagnostics, how, you know, there's a, you know, we spend money on doing pre-screening to find, you know, patients that are enriched for, you know, the indications that we're, you know, that we're interested in, yeah, or that we have studies for that we can, you know, so we spend our marketing dollars doing that. But if there's an easier way where we can cast a wider net and we spend that dollar on, you know, on, you know, this, on this, excuse me, on this pre-screening, mm-hmm, but then we also can, you know, spend that same dollar on bringing in an IVD patient so that, okay, we can make,
yeah,
you know, some money off of that. You know, that's kind of what I mean.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I like that.
And if both fail, make that patient a recruiter for you. Hey, this is the status we have. If you know anybody, bring them over.
Yeah. We had one patient.
Every dollar, yeah, three times.
Three times, right? There you go.
We had one patient so far here that I haven't found any patient recruiters yet in Yuma.
Yeah.
One guy came close. That study ended. But he was like, yeah, I got all these people. Well, none of them qualified. And then one day he sent me, he said it was by accident, his Christmas wish list for his son. And I was like, what is this? He's been sending me patients, but none of them made it. Mm-hmm. And then I got this picture of, like, this is what I want for my son. And he's like, oh, my bad. That I sent you that for my son instead. But I was like, I think he's trying to tell me something. But none of his patients made it. So I was like, you know, let's continue on another study. But it's interesting how every community is slightly different. And you got to go out and find those people that are well connected in the, mm-hmm, community. And that's what you're doing with, we didn't talk about it on camera, I don't think, your waiting room with the Native American and the,
yeah,
art.
We have,
do you want to share a little bit about that?
Sure. We have, in
that's
our,
innovative, man. First is train. Now it's this, then, yeah, every dollar twice. We're, yeah, getting nuggets, yeah, gold.
We have, artwork from local Native Americans inside of our,
and any site can do this, by the way,
inside our facility, and it's all for sale. So we, the artists have little blurbs about them, and then they can purchase.
How'd you set that up, though? Like, how you,
Che, who's our tribal liaison,
he's been on the pod,
yeah, yeah, he's actually he's doing a lot, but he set that up. He got us a contract with I think it's Native Grounds we were talking about. So we're serving Native American coffee.
Yeah.
We sponsored these jerseys are from the baseball, for our baseball team. We sponsored three elementary, junior high, and a high school team for the Tohono O'odham Nation, which is the Salt River Pima,
mm-hmm,
community. That's Che's community. He coaches all three teams too. He's a really good,
okay,
coach too.
Oh. Okay.
Cool. You know, and coaches make good leaders. Yeah. I saw him at the game we were there watching, and actually, James from Stitch. Do you know James from Stitch? He was at SOS.
Maybe.
From across the pond. I think he's actually from Australia, but lives in the UK now. He came out to one of the games.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and rewatched the junior high team and the high school team were playing at the same time. And it's the largest Native American baseball tournament.
Okay.
But he came out and watched the game. And
so Makoa Health was a sponsor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you recommend sites do like Little League sponsorships?
Yeah, I think
we get hit up a lot by people. Hey, sponsor my Little League team, and you get your banner in the outfield.
I think it's good. What we're really trying to do, and this is how I had originally had met Che. One of the a big problem facing, especially that specific community, is diabetes. 40% of their entire population has diabetes. It's the highest rate of diabetes per capita in the entire world. Their average, the life expectancy, wow, is only 53. This is in America. That is crazy low number. So the good thing about sports teams is we're really trying to encourage healthy lifestyles from a young age on. The diabetes isn't solely, you know, it's not all diet based or anything. There's got to be a genetic component to it.
Yeah.
I don't think we really know, but they still need the help. So,
and you won't know without research,
right? And so focusing on that—that's why Che got so excited. And you know, he came on part time to start, and then he just came on full time.
He's full time now for you.
He's full time, and he's actually
what's
working
his title? His
tribal liaison. So he's,
wow,
he's doing,
we need that here, man.
He's
is
doing
that all
recruitment
he does,
as well.
Oh, he does like
no, he does some
stuff.
Recruitment. Yeah, he's doing coordinator, mm-hmm, stuff as well. But he's also right now. So we're kind of rolling.
Are you good at coordinating?
A little bit, just starting.
Oh, okay.
But he,
okay,
is uploading documents, things like that,
wow,
kind of like a research assistant. Okay. But he spent a lot of time on the phone, and he's building relationships with other tribes. So We're rolling into Artisan Research Network. We're not up yet, but we're adding in some sites, and it's, I think we're really going to target other Native American communities as well.
Yeah.
Currently, he's working with Dave's site in McAllen. He's trying to build a relationship with the Lipan Apache tribe, which is in McAllen. And then we're
there's
trying
Native Americans there too in Rio Grande.
Yeah, that's right. There's three recognized Native American tribes in Texas, and one of them happens to be right in McAllen, Texas.
Okay. And we got two tribes here.
We got two here.
Two in Yuma.
Yep. And then he's working with Seminoles with Jen Page's sites in Florida, and they come out to Arizona for big basketball tournaments. So it's a really good way to, because they always need sponsors for their sports teams.
I see.
And you know, you can get to kids are the best way to get to a community, and by supporting them.
To anyone,
you know, right. But when you support their kids, people say thank you, you know. And we were at the they had a Native American Day at the baseball game, so you know all the teams went out there, and we were sitting with them. There's kids, you know, and it was fun, and their parents were there, and you know they're polite and thankful.
We got to talk to Izzy here, the property manager. Mm-hmm. Her son is like a stud baseball little leaguer. She's always hitting us up about sponsoring
B-roll.
His name is B-roll.
I sponsor a you know, something else. I sponsor there's a Filipino kid that I sponsor. I bought him a dirt bike. He's a motocross racer, and then we place ads in the so especially if you're trying
to
get to in Phoenix. If you're trying to get into underrepresented populations, there's usually some sort of publication or magazine. So like the tribe has their own they each have their own publication locally. There's a publication specifically for the Filipino community in Phoenix, re-advertising that for COPD, obesity, diabetes, liver.
For Native Americans outreach, no one's site is like Lee's that I'm aware of. Not I know there's like North Dakota sites. Maybe that's all they do.
I know three sites that do it well. Makoa is purpose-built for that. I think, you know, Lee and I have talked about this quite a few times. Like the thing driving the business aside from like values is like we want to solve million dollar problems for billion dollar companies.
Yeah.
And so part of that is like everybody's been talking about the diversity.
I'm as loving
man.
Yes.
That's my favorite.
I'm going to rewatch the podcast $1 million times, man.
Yeah, and it's been like this has been a hot topic for a long time to, you know, not exclude certain populations from clinical trials. Yeah. And part of that, I think the hardest nut to crack is, you know, the Native American tribes, because where are clinical research sites? Basically where there's clinical researchers, which is disproportionately
cities.
Suburban and urban areas.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have a very, you have a unique situation in East Phoenix where you actually have a large metropolitan area, you have plenty of staffing available, you have ease of access to a major airport, and you also have two tribes directly to the north, directly to the south.
Yeah.
So that is like probably the best place to have, you know, to crack this nut.
From a philosophy standpoint, kind of to add on or how we got there, Dave and I have always had kind of a similar.
You guys are college roommates, right?
No, but we were friends in college.
Okay.
We were in a fellowship together in college. But so Dave always uses the term, you know, I'm skating to where the puck's going. So he has that foresight to where things are going. And what we've really tried to do, what I like to say is like, you go to the customers and what is it you really need? What's the value proposition? So you find out what they need, and then you like reverse engineer that success. This is what they want, and then you take it step by step backwards.
Mm-hmm.
So you can reverse engineer it, so then you know where to start. And then from there, you get to where the puck is going.
Have you guys talked to sponsors about this? I'm sure you have.
About
your initiatives?
Native. I talked to some.
He's actually got sponsors reaching out to him.
What is the reaction generally?
It ranges
from like indifference to, because you may talk to some biotechs, they don't really care, but then you get like a major top five pharma and they're like
the larger,
all over this.
All of the sponsors really react positively to it, especially because we have the data to show that, you know, that we've had success. Now, while we do, you know, enroll Native Americans, that's still not the majority of our patients, you know.
Right, of course.
If we have 5%,
I mean, you're in Phoenix, like that's a huge market.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, and it'll have to be proportionate to like the actual population too, right? So, because we get reached out a lot on that and Hispanics, because we're so close to the border. That's one, two of the things that our sponsors really like. And then they ask us about like Asians. We don't have that many Asians in town, you know, but at the end of the day, I think the whole population has certain ranges, like X amount of white, X amount of Hispanics, X amount natives. So as long as we're meeting that quota, I think it's good. And nobody else is recruiting from what we heard before.
That's why I sponsored the Filipino kid. They were asking for Pacific Islanders. I don't even know how to get Pacific Islanders. And this opportunity came up, and I said, you know what? He was talking about how they're involved.
Yeah.
I've gotten, I mean, I don't know, three or four Filipino patients, but you still add that.
Yeah. That's three or four more. That's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's awesome.
It's a lot of stuff a lot of sites can start doing in their communities.
Yeah, I think that's the reverse engineering part. It's very important because we all want to do something. Sometimes we just don't know where to start. But starting, like, going back and look at what can we do, Rich, like what Dan does with the interview and local businesses.
It's important the sites do it, too. So I've had a lot of sponsors ask, well, can we host an event over here? They don't. You know, most of the...
They could buy some art.
Yeah, but any of the communities, you know, they don't want Big Farm out there. They like little
Chet
sites.
Chet even mentioned that on the pod.
Yeah, but he did. And mm-hmm. they really don't want... I'm not going to say any specific sponsor name, but any sponsor, you insert a name here. You know, if you know what, they don't want them out there because there's still that level of distrust. We're a healthy intermediary, site owners in general, not just my site, any site. If they're...
Yeah.
If they're the, they kind of, you know, stand in the gap there to take people from that community and then get the data that's needed. But then you have that trust.
You're
the
still
community.
The human, mm-hmm. the liaison, you know, you have, it's like
the
big
the
pharma. Yeah. The big pharma is just, they want the data. They want to extract the data to sell back to these people, right? Even indirectly through payers. That's not very trustworthy for most people, but a site, you know, you've got MAs from the community.
Yeah.
They might be neighbors with each other, so it becomes a very community-oriented business or stakeholder in this industry, which is why sites are never getting rid of sites, I don't think, unless they do in silica trials where the puck is going. But that's like 30 years, 20. How soon do you think in silica virtual trial, the real virtual trial?
I think
like digital twin type of shit.
Yeah, I mean, I think anything that's like further than like 10 years off is, you know, is just a darts in a dark room type of thing. Like,
yeah.
I have no idea.
Digital twins. That's it. Anything else? Follow Dave and Lee and Jaime. Jaime's got a LinkedIn too.
Oh, I need coordinators, possibly a site.
I got
director.
A good one. She just direct messaged me on Instagram.
Nah, I need somebody in qualified that's in Phoenix.
I think both of those she checks.
Maybe somebody else.
We'll find some people. How do you find staff? Thursday next week, I told everyone, you're not in this room. We're interviewing a new round of people. So one of our coordinators is going to be moving to San Diego by the end of August. And another one, who knows, like they're always, you know, that's another thing we can spend an hour on is we hire entry-level people usually. As you start giving them years of experience, they become a hot commodity. And so now it's like, okay, we have to worry about replenishing our pipeline for the staff, for human resources. Mm-hmm. And in a place like Yuma, you're not going to find – experienced coordinators.
I'm thinking about going straight to phlebotomists.
That's a natural one.
Because
you already know they could be immediate value.
Yeah, they can do blood draw. And then, Jen Page has done really such a good job with her source and realigning it that now, you know, if you do your source right, I got away from building my source a couple years ago, and that was a mistake. I should have built my own source.
You personally?
Yeah. I need somebody that has the level
from all our studies
detail.
I think I only built one of them.
I know, but I did, when I did it myself, I had to do it when I had new coordinators because I could make it step by step by step what they, you know, it was.
That was the stage we were in when I did it. I did that one, mm-hmm. and I still think it's the best source because I did it. But I'm not. I don't like doing that.
I don't like doing it either. That's why I got away from it. Now, but Jen's really helped doing it, and I need to go back to the basics of research.
Yeah.
She's really come in and been a huge help with getting us back to where we needed to be. And but if there's sources done right, you can bring in
full bloodness
and then train them.
It gives you like a room for error, I think.
It does. And you know, I had this conversation with my coordinators the other day, and we're from a little different generation. We're a little older, but we were always told when telling a story, because we always tell them, like, you have to tell the story. Make sure that's what research is. Tell the story. But I think we had it pounded in our heads that, you know, as kids, to tell any story, you have to know who, what, when, where, why, and how. Those are the six questions you have to answer. So
And now they're skipping some of these.
Right. And now, well, a source answers a lot of them for you, especially if you're doing it right. The when is there, because that's when you're putting it in. But, well, that's what I really went over in depth with.
Man, that's the third quote of the pod.
What's that?
We're breaking records, man. Who, what, why, when, where, and how.
Who, what, when, where, why, and how.
LOA-CCCCEA.
Yeah, you know, when we're documenting for a patient visit, those are the questions we have to answer. Like, what the patient, what's coming in from,
everything you do, those are the questions you have to answer. Those are the, if you answer everything you do in research, whether... Even if it's, even if the what part of it, I mean, even if you're reconciling IP, you know, when was it distributed? What was distributed? How much, you know?
It's a never-ending job to do continuous quality assurance.
Yeah.
You guys bullish on this new FDA? Bearish? I was bearish. I was bearish. I'm turning bullish, but I think... mainly as an investor, I haven't thought about it enough as a site owner, because biotech's been getting beat up, but these guys seem to be on the side of that small biotechs.
I think that, I mean, you know, I don't know what really the future holds, but from people that I talk to, I think there's more people that are bearish
about it, by far,
which I think that gives people who are generally optimists a huge advantage. You know, like most people, if they're convinced that they can't succeed at something, they don't even bother trying. And so
they stick their head in the sand.
You know, if there's a lot of our, you know, I mean, I generally ignore competitors and just do everything I can to, you know, be excellent at what I'm doing. But if you see in general, like, all, you know, people who are competing with you for trials and for patient recruitment, and you see them as a threat to you, if most of them are bearish, they may not try as hard, and that gives those who do try a great opportunity to
steal Warren Buffett quote, be greedy when people are fearful, fearful where people are greedy.
So you think it's a nothing burger, the new FDA?
I don't know. I generally, it's
I don't have an answer on this one yet. Undefined.
I don't know. Regardless, so it's our job to adapt to the times. Of course, we're gonna make it.
I mean, I can't recall the one guy's name, but he's the Stanford professor. I used to watch his
Macri. No, Vinay Prasad.
That's right, Vinay Prasad.
He's so, Sieber.
Yeah, I've been a huge Prasad fan. Well, okay, I didn't know his name. I couldn't remember his name, so clearly his book. I'm not all that big of a fan. But like, I know I've been watching his like YouTube content for about 4 or 5 years.
He's a YouTuber, man, and he's headed Sieber.
Yeah, and I think he's exceptionally articulate and really incisive and very unique in his, you know, thoughts overall. And sometimes, like, when you're talking about bureaucracies, you sometimes need something fresh in order to shake things up. And, you know, I wouldn't be
we'll make that a short and put it on LinkedIn. Watch your follower count drop, babe. It's all right, you don't need those followers anyways. I'm with you guys. I think it's our job to adapt regardless. And if everything was easy, then it would actually be harder for us.
Everybody would do it. I mean, I don't know. I just saw 2 days ago, I think, that they got rid of all the vaccine panel, like or 10 of them.
Yeah.
And then they just rehired 7 new ones. And
they put Malone in charge of it.
So I'm like, I don't know. I mean, I seen, like, I got the flu shot personally, right? I'm not speaking statistics. I got the flu shot, and one time I was like, nah, I don't want it. And then I got the flu, and it was bad. Mm. So I'm like, no, next year I'll get it. And yeah. I don't know if I got a flu or a cold, because whatever I had, even though they had flu at home, it wasn't as bad. So I was like, well, this thing works. But then, but that's just one vaccine, right? And the only way to, when I'm speaking of vaccines only, to like clear out any controversy is just like, hey, you know what? Bring in the data, bring in the research, and then get the best experts, good, pro and against, and come to a consensus. And then it's ultimately to the parents if we want to do vaccines or ourselves, right? And I think it's the same in research. I know there's a lot of talk, but I don't know where we're at there, that they just bring pro and cons, like people are against, people are in favor, and then we do what's best for the patient at the end of the day. You know, at the end of the day, we want the best medications, we want the best treatments, we want the stuff that's gonna improve the quality of life, bring up those 53, you know, expectancy life rate for any, in this case, natives, or it's what is like 70 something for the rest of the population, bring that up. And not just being alive, but miserable, being alive and healthy in a way. And that's where we at, all of us are. You know, we're trying to just be better. And I hope it's good changes, but I don't know. I have no idea how it's going to turn out.
Yeah. I think none of us really do, but it's interesting to watch and talk about.
We were talking about being adaptable. What is your thought on site networks? As organizations typically grow, they become, well, they might have some back efficiencies that kind of lose that scrappiness and that creativity. Yeah. I think I think you see more creativity.
I mean, how many site networks?
Adaptability inside of small sites. So they may be able to stick and move, so to speak, a lot faster than a site network. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree.
Is pharma's position on that? Do you think they're gravitating towards the site network, or do you think they're going to gravitate towards the individual site owners?
I think pharma wants their cake and eat it too. I think they want both on their site portfolio, and they want efficiency. So they just look at it aggregate. If we have all this data, let's say 400 patients, let's say half of them are from site network, so we can expect at least data to be entered within 3 to 5 days, because those site networks, they do streamline those things better than smaller sites. But then we have like these interesting community outreach initiatives from these smaller sites, and we've got some Native Americans coming in from Makoa Health. I think they'll take it. They'll take that mixture, because to the sponsor, they don't care.
Yeah, maybe they're looking for the mixture. Yeah. I'm just curious if they're smart. Is there a risk? Yeah, I just curious your opinion if you feel that there's a risk for us small guys getting pushed out by big site networks.
I mean, if those site networks are very good in the market, I think it's already happening in some markets.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot more confidence, I think, that if you're a – and I'm putting myself in the shoes of a site selection team. There's going to be more confidence that if you're part of a site network, that site's going to give you a certain expected level of quality. You know, imagine if you go to a new city and you see there's a Chili's and then there's like a, you know, Joe's hot dog stand or whatever.
Right.
You know the quality because
that's a really good point.
But then at the same time, there's also very unique, you know, gems that you don't know, because no large site network is like, okay, I'm going to go greenfield a site that specializes in the recruitment of Native Americans, or I'm going to go greenfield a site that, you know, specializes in this, that, or the other thing, because they wait at the finish line for someone to be successful, and then they acquire that, right? They don't, you know, they're more of in the mode of like buying these cash flowing businesses that already established that track record of success, and then applying the standardized procedures from the overall network. And then importantly, one thing that smaller sites do not have is they have an army of business development people that are going to get all the best studies first before, you know, before they
wine and dine, so baby.
That's why it's more and more and more important for individual sites to show and to deliver that unique value that they're not going to get anywhere else. Because, and I think this came from the Comprehensive Guide to Clinical Research.
Oh, wow.
The
good best, book, I heard.
It might have been, yeah, it may have been the, may have not be on the print. It may be on
Chris Sauber wrote that, right?
that one.
But, I'm getting really far away from
maybe almost fully 50-50.
Yeah. But the absolute best way to acquire trials is to be on like a preferred vendors list for whatever sponsor that is.
Of course.
I only know of one way to do it. You get one study and then you provide something that's so valuable to them that they'll go back to you over and over and over and over again.
We saw it in real time here. Yeah. We had one of our first good study here, the first one that was 250K or more, was arthritis of the knee. Within 6 months of us getting on that database, we got another OA of the knee study offered to us, and we only had three studies. So there's no way that's like random. There, and it was the same CRO.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's how it works. Yeah, you have to do decent, and then they're like, okay, there's a new market here we haven't tapped.
Yep.
Let's give them our work, and pretty soon you start getting more and more, and then it becomes a quality thing. Because at some point, you can enroll, but can you maintain the quality, which I know we put a QA person in. She started last week.
Yeah, they keep track of those metrics.
They keep track
on those metrics, and because we just had a call with someone but more down than myself, but and then they show us the green and the red, and I'm like, You got to compete with all the other sites and be better than them in order to survive, I think. That's the only way. That's why.
Yeah. Regis completely overhauled everything for that reason. And
it's.
They're like, look, we'll keep doing because you're a unique location, but you got to get some of the metrics.
And deliver what we promise. I think that's the main one. Deliver with the good quality and no deviations or no major deviations at least. And I think we can survive. But again, we have to stay.
No, you can never rest. Yeah. You're like your business will always change. Even if you perfect it, you think you perfected it, the market's going to change. Something's going to be. I really think we need to figure out CRISPR how to do that. That's going to be the gold rush in 5-10 years. Mm. One and done treatments.
Let me think about that more. I have probably a couple.
They're just
in
infusions.
Ways.
Like, but you need specialized doctors.
This is Dave's wheelhouse here. He's going back to his PhD.
He's the omics guy.
Yeah, I used to work at DharmaCon, if you're familiar with DharmaCon. But, I think that the per patient value would be pretty high, but most of the solutions are fairly low, like rare. It's going to be generally
for now.
Like more rare disease,
Yeah, Prasad has said as much.
Yeah.
He said, if there's a pill for cholesterol, why would we change your genome?
Yeah.
But he didn't say the same thing for leukemia or for beta thalassemia, which they already have the IP.
Yeah, and that's, that kind of, we've already seen, like, this major revolution in, like, utilizing genomic technologies, right? So we, like, the mRNA vaccines, like, a couple years ago, the Nobel Prize in Medicine.
Doudna.
Yeah, so, and then, as we saw, like, Moderna came out of nowhere, and now just about every pharma company is making these mRNA vaccines. So, that came directly from the Human Genome Project. 20 years later, what do you have? You have a technology that can build a vaccine against anything that has a genome. Yeah. And then, another part of that is, like, since we know the genome, like, and since we have all of this information, and since sequencing is so incredibly cheap today, now we can actually, like, now once we have this technology that can potentially edit that, like, now it's all about delivery, right? Like, whether or not you can get the delivery, and everyone
and
knows
now it's turning into in vivo. Doudna's new company is called Azalea Therapeutics. They're not public yet.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all about in vivo treatments, like not waiting 3 weeks or 4 weeks to get the drug manufactured, and it's like 500K. Like, it's getting cheaper, which is what technology is supposed to do.
Yeah.
Deflationary force.
Yeah, because, there's absolutely the technology to make it. And so if you're doing some type of in vivo like in vivo, where the outcome is supposed to be the patient heals, right? Mm-hmm. You know, then for every single thing you're working on, there's a very different, you know, there's a very different delivery method, right? Like if you want to correct type 1 diabetes, right? You don't care if you're the inside of your nose is able to secrete insulin. You want to go to the, you know, beta like cells in the pancreas, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, having a specialized, you know, a unique way to deliver the CRISPR-Cas9, you know, molecule to those areas, like so that they can enter into, you know, the like enter into the organ, and you know, they're not all neatly in one layer, right?
That's because where it's headed, unless there's some papers come out that it's dangerous, but Prasad already said the burden of proof for things unmet needs are much lower than for the next obesity drug or the next cholesterol drug. The burden of proof is much lower, which sponsors hear that and they're like,
that's a good point.
Yes.
Yeah.
Let's do that.
Yeah. So I think
low burden of proof. Cool.
So yeah, there's
vaccine study delayed.
Right. Especially with these guys.
Yeah, they're.
But you guys are doing awesome things, man. I mean, this could be a 3-hour thing. How many hours are we at so far? Two?
You're like an hour, 10 minutes.
Oh, my God.
An hour and 10 minutes. Wow.
Follow Jaime. Follow Dave. Follow Lee. Anything else?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. If you're a new site owner, sign up for DSCS.
Oh, thank you. Yes.